But we're really trying to think about, how do we not just passively participate? How do I account for this with my visions of telling these big epic, you know, still movies and video games? You know, we want to tell our own stories.
Hey, what's going on? Hope you're well and having a good week as always. So on this week's episode of the Welcome to the Metaverse podcast, we are discussing the next generation of storytelling through the medium of NFTs and into the metaverse. Our guest this week is Ramon Gouveia, founder of Myth Division, an IP development studio and team of incredible, very experienced storytellers across multiple platforms, comics, film, TV, animation, and video games. Ramon himself has worked for the likes of the legendary Stan Lee, as well as iconic NBA player Baron Davis. He's also an NFT OG, was very early in this space, and is now focused on utilizing the commercial rights of his Bored Apes, along with his own IP creations, which we dive fully into in this chat. It was awesome to have someone on who knows the legacy entertainment world so well, and is now focused on this new Web3 world as well. Thank you, Ramon, for coming on. If you want to get in touch about the show, do say hello on Twitter. It's at Luke_Franks. This show is, of course, brought to you by the brilliant EveryRealm. And if you want metaverse industry news, updates, and events sent straight to your inbox, you need to subscribe to the EveryRealm Edition newsletter. It's free to do so. Just head to everyrealm.substack.com. Link is in the show notes. And I'll tell you a bit more about that. Plus, EveryRealm's latest announcement, their upcoming home design metaverse game, Hometopia, later in the show. Finally, as always, nothing in this podcast is financial or investment advice. Always do your own research. And with that said, let's dive into this week's episode. Ramon, great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Luke. It's been a little while since I saw you last on our adventures around the world.
Yeah, so for context, we met each other in Dubai at the Dubai Metaverse Assembly, this big event where loads of the builders in the space were there, lots of big names, Decentraland and The Sandbox and even Meta and Microsoft, and it was a cool time. So it was a privilege to hang out with you and your business partner Brett as well. Shout out Brett, and we had a good time, and I got to hear your story about how you got into this space as an OG and having come from an entertainment kind of IP background. And I was like, I gotta get you on to tell this story, because it's really fascinating. It's pretty cool to everything that's happening in this space. So I don't usually start with the classic podcast question of give us your background story, but in this case it's very relevant because you've been, as we say, building IP in the entertainment industry for a long time way before NFTs went mainstream. So yeah, I'd love to hear kind of a bit of your journey in the sort of legacy entertainment industry, and maybe some projects that you previously worked on before you do what you do now.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks for having me. I think it was a really cool experience just meeting in Dubai. That was my first time in Dubai. And just like seeing the city and seeing what they're building over there is pretty cool. But I'll start kind of with what, you know, put me on this journey. And initially, that was the desire to be a screenwriter. So I started off, I guess it was 2007 was when I moved to California. I was born there initially. Kind of a long story. My childhood, I grew up kind of bi-coastal. I was raised on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., but I got to spend my summers out in California, Southern California. And so I kind of always was entrenched in this idea of just being in entertainment and wanting to tell stories, being a storyteller. And so in 2007, I went back to California. Didn't really have any relationships in the industry, but knew I wanted to write for movies and video games and comic books and everything. And at the time, the video game industry wasn't really like what it is today, which is very different. But I knew that was sort of a way to start building a name and building a career, essentially, right? And so I quickly learned that if I wanted to get my stuff produced or made or turned into anything, then I had to learn how to do that myself. And so that was sort of the first, I think, wake-up call for me, where I realized that being able, as a content creator, as an artist, as a storyteller, to be able to tell my stories, I would have to learn literally all the different aspects of business and the different ways and vehicles that I was going to have to go through in order to, you know, make it happen, right? So I think that was like the big lesson early on. And so from there, I basically went on and I started my own production company. This was in 2010. I started my own production company and was basically producing short form content for a lot of the multi-channel networks. So back then, YouTube was first, you know, investing in a bunch of different content. And they were like, okay, how do we start creating this user-generated content? And they gave $1 million to various channels, Stan Lee's World of Heroes and Machinima. And so this was like the first, you know, viral video content of of like Our Day, if you remember. And so I got the opportunity to produce videos for them. And so just kind of cut my teeth doing very small videos. And I was writing and I was directing and I was producing and just kind of learning the industry and kind of how it fit into virality and social media and something being commercial. So kind of learned a little bit of production in that aspect and then went on, did a documentary. I think my biggest, I'd say, accomplishment at the time, or what really kind of validated what I was doing, or my choice, or the sacrifices of like building my own business and just to get my writing like made, right? Not even seen necessarily, but to at least just have it done at the quality that I wanted to have a finished product and be proud of, was I got the opportunity to work with Stan Lee. And so I produced a music video for him. I was working over at with a friend who was working at Stan Lee's World of Heroes, kind of managing that channel and the YouTube presence and social media. And so that really kind of reminded me, like, okay, this is all worth it. Like following these dreams, trying to become a content creator, it's really hard work. And, you know, it's a thankless job for a long time before anyone even recognizes what you're doing. I mean, even like podcasting or anything like that, right? You have to do a ton of content before people actually go, hey, I really like your content, or I'm actually watching your content. So it was the same thing for me. And so I got that opportunity and then went on, produced a feature film documentary in South America that got distribution on a digital channel. And at that time, I had really gone heavily into understanding how to build social communities. So I was on Facebook and utilizing a lot of that content. It was about ancient archaeology. So kind of like the ancient aliens subject matter back in like 2011, 12. I was creating, I guess, content at that time that could go viral that was related to like archaeology. And so we were making memes and I was, you know, building videos out of stuff that we were gathering online. And it was actually fact-checked and we were making sure that it was, you know, real information. It wasn't like clickbaity stuff. But we were really kind of experimenting with content marketing. And that was like mind-blowing for me. It was like, hey, you can create content and there's ways to share it with certain people and, you know, have it go viral and all that kind of stuff. And so it became like a little formula. And then, of course, all those companies started monetizing it. Facebook and all those platforms started like charging for ads. So it just became a little less interesting to me to like even be playing in that space. And I knew that I wanted to get back to writing and producing more content, you know, bigger stuff. So I got the opportunity to work at Scopely, which is a mobile gaming company. They do huge games like Yahtzee and, you know, all kinds, Wheel of Fortune, I think. And they did a game called The Walking Dead Road to Survival. And so I got the opportunity to do copywriting and basically kind of taking all the parts of what the game was that they needed to sell and figuring out how do we kind of market this to our customers, to people that are playing the game, right? How do we, you know, really make these mechanics sound interesting, all that kind of stuff. So I got a deep dive into gaming and then from there went on to work as a chief content officer for an NBA player. And so he had retired due to an injury, but he was a two-time NBA All-Star. His name is Baron Davis, for those who are familiar, you know, amazing player, legendary player, truly, but played for the Golden State Warrior team. That's pretty well known throughout history, especially NBA history. But I got the opportunity to work with him and manage all of his content from kind of development of ideation to figuring out how do we turn this into a story to finding distribution and really just kind of going from there and negotiating and managing a lot of that stuff. So utilized all that, started my own company, Myth Division, and then NFTs came along, and that was really like kind of the shortcut of my journey. But, you know, along that way, I was also building a comic book imprint. So I had learned crowdfunding and Kickstarter and had basically been utilizing that to kind of self-finance the content that I wanted to create while I was working for these other larger companies, just doing something unrelated. And so NFTs changed the game, man. They really did.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a very cool story, and the different puzzle pieces sort of all fit into what you're doing now, which is interesting. Before we dive into kind of what NFTs, you know, have done and that moment that kind of really opened up your kind of next chapter, how do you think about kind of the sort of traditional IP model, like the legacy way of creating an IP? It kind of works, obviously, but where does kind of the revenue accrue, and what would you say the problems are that maybe NFTs begin to solve? It'd be interesting just to kind of go through the traditional model before we go into the new model.
Well, I think like there's very broad strokes here, right? There's, when talking about Web3 or NFTs, like it introduces just a brand new concept, I think, that evolves from what I was even saying that I had started understanding with crowdfunding. And that is this this new direct-to-consumer business model, right? And that's become a very kind of popular buzzword, I guess you could say at this point. A lot of people say, you know, DTC or, you know, direct-to-consumer, and that is like, you know, there's a lot of platforms that are direct to consumer, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that they're monetizing content in the best way or they're sustainable or anything like that. But I think what's interesting about Web3 is that it's enabling us to utilize this new technology that creates a layer of transparency that didn't exist before. And it also creates this sort of like a bridge, I guess you could say, for anyone who has, truly owns a piece of content, right? Where we're able to document this on the blockchain, and then you can now utilize that piece of content as a utility, right? That becomes more than just, you know, a subscription login, right? With a username and a password, all of a sudden that becomes a physical object, like a passcode, or a key card or a token, right? Or an image of a cartoon animal, right? Whatever that may be, that NFT component of it now allows you to connect with something in a certain way that hasn't been possible before. And so I think that's like the cool opportunity in that, within the framework of the idea of direct to consumer. But in terms of the old problems with IP specifically, a lot of that, I think that at least I've identified, and that, you know, my colleagues and people that I've worked with, we've talked about at length. A lot of those problems stem from kind of a lack of cohesion between story. So if you think about the brands that have done this, I'll say the ones that have done this the most successfully rather than the least successfully, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that can think of brands or franchises or IP that have done this incorrectly, where you fragment the story and lose the fandom aspect of it, right? You know, I'm not just talking about stories evolving for generations. I just mean like losing the core sort of thread or through line or thematics of what a brand or franchise is. But Marvel Cinematic Universe for a long time was like the epitome of doing that well. And that was because they had Kevin Feige kind of managing that whole project, deciding, okay, these are the films we're going to do. These are the stories that are going to intertwine. And then successfully layering that out amongst other content like television and video games and other campaigns, right? There's a very particular kind of model for that that I think a lot of brands have been missing for a long time. And now that that's become kind of the primary focus, I'd say, for a lot of these big studios, is how do we create a franchise or a brand that's going to last and that's going to resonate and going to have a big wide audience? Because they're thinking about the bottom line, right? They just want to think about how can we maximize how much money we're making from it. And I think that's a part of it as well. And so by interjecting this direct-to-consumer model and then sort of aiming to fix a lot of these structural things that tend to happen when you fragment licensing to different companies and different companies are telling the stories of the same character. By fixing those things, I think we'll see kind of a renaissance of storytelling. And that's really what brings me here, like why I'm a part of this whole metaverse revolution, right?
This show is brought to you by EveryRealm, who are your portal to the metaverse. Now, if you want to stay up to date with regular metaverse industry news, updates, and events, you need to subscribe to the EveryRealm Edition newsletter. It covers the NFT economy, new projects, data and trends, the global crypto markets, and gaming content such as esports, metaverse games, and more. It's totally free to sign up to, but there's also a premium version that gives paying members additional access to platforms and projects that are on EveryRealm's radar. And to stay up to date, just head to everyrealm.substack.com. I also want to tell you quickly about EveryRealm's latest announcement, their upcoming home design metaverse game, Hometopia. Hometopia is a realistic home design and world creation game set for release in 2023. For those who grew up loving bestsellers like The Sims or Animal Crossing, Hometopia will give you the chance to design your dream metaverse property. It looks like a lot of fun and something to keep a very close eye on. You can find out more about all of these things at everyrealm.com or click the links in the show notes. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, and very quickly, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on kind of fandom as well, because I always look at, we kind of had with Web2 this distribution layer, like you're saying, where, you know, suddenly fans can now really support, whether it's an IP or it's an artist or whoever, in a powerful way online and you know, help distribute their music or whatever globally and instantly. But their fans don't really get rewarded for those things, you know, like a lot of fans create you know, fan art and fan stories and things around the things they love, but all of that value kind of goes back to the studio that created the original characters or whatever, even though the audience are a huge part of their success. So before we kind of dive into NFTs, do you think that's another piece of the puzzle here, where NFTs can kind of give back some of that, you know, ownership and value to the fans and communities that are really the core of these IPs and, you know, whatever that is?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a good question. I think that that is really one of the most honestly revolutionary things about this period and this technology is that, you know, I have heard other people say this, and I definitely think this is true, but this is like one of the biggest wealth transfers in history is happening right now. And that's because the systems that are being created right now that affect our, you know, our economics, our global economics and our financial systems, just the infrastructures themselves, it's changing everything, and it's not being regulated as quickly as it's changing things. So there's opportunity in that. And, you know, what that really means is that people who normally wouldn't have had access to resources or money at all now can create art and generate, you know, cryptocurrency. And I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, that's fake money or that's not real. It's like, it's no less real than the digital numbers in your fiat bank account, right? Couple keystrokes. It's actually, you know, more secure because those keystrokes are controlled by a handful of banks and these are not, right? So I think that that's really the core of this, I think. And so because of that, because of this sort of global financial shift, we're able to see just new and innovative ways of wealth distribution when it comes to royalties or IP, right? So in building MintDivision from a Web3 standpoint, thinking about how we're structuring our company, one of the key things I wanted to do was solve a lot of the problems that I had back in 2007 when I was starting this journey, when I was just a writer who wanted to have my stuff made, right? If there were not just resources, because you do have to work hard at your craft, I think, to really earn the ability to spend resources, because those are resources that could be going towards someone who's been doing their craft for 10 years or 20 years, right? So I think that there's a little bit of meritocracy that has to be injected into the system. And so I think one of the big ways is through gamification and through storytelling, but making it a very sort of self-aware experience. And so a lot of what we're doing is we've created, we bought into a bunch of the, I guess you could say, blue chip NFT projects, the Bored Apes and the Gutter Cats, and we've been playing with that IP. We love the idea of being able to have that commercial IP license and be able to monetize that. And so I saw that as an opportunity for a case study, being able to pull that off ourselves and then model our entrance into NFTs in a similar way, where we do offer licensing and royalties. And so the average person who buys an NFT, it's not this passive, you know, sort of, kind of buy in and pray that it goes up situation where you're very passive, which is what happens a lot with obviously a lot of these tokens. And we've seen this happen with even NFT collections, right? Where you buy in and you just hope that enough people buy in and it goes up and it's in high demand, right? Without utility. Now there's a way to really think of it in terms of you're just buying into an ecosystem or a community or a cast of characters. And that's how we've approached the space. So that's really how we're building.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll dive into MintDivision in a second and really kind of get into the weeds of what you're building, because it kind of brings all these ideas together. Before that, though, I did just want to ask you the question of, you know, when you saw Bored Apes, I know you were very early in the early kind of clubhouse groups chatting about these ideas, and, you know, NFTs in some way have been around a long time, but this kind of mainstream moment was happening, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. How much conviction did you have at the time of, you know, when Bored Apes were about? I know you picked a few up just after Mint, but I'd just be interested to go through your thought process of, you know, why you made that decision and how convinced were you at in that exact moment?
Yeah, it was, it's funny. It was definitely very calculated. It was what I would call a calculated bet. I had bought two NFTs before that, and kind of at that point had been asking myself, okay, great. Now that I have these NFTs, what do you do with them? Do I just display them somewhere? You know, what is the idea here? I get that it's provenance. I get this is, you know, OG NFTs, which is great. And I understood the technology, but I didn't know, you know, what's next, right? And then I had heard after the minting that you had the commercial IP rights to your ape once you bought it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a thing. That's something, because I could see how big the community is. Well, really just kind of the generative PFP movement I had started to kind of watch and understand a little bit. And I saw the power of communities. And so when I understood that that was interjected into the formula, at that point, I was like, oh, that changes the game, because now 10,000 people are going to be working ideally, you know, or however many holders, right? But, you know, at least a few thousand people are now going to be working towards the monetization of their cartoon character, essentially, right? They're going to be looking to brand, to build out, to tell stories, to position themselves as a Tony the Tiger or, you know, whatever, right? So I saw that right away because of my background in entertainment and branding and all all that, I saw where that was going. So I immediately was like, okay, which ape am I going to get? And it was the most expensive, you know, NFT that I had bought at that point, or it was on par actually, because the first NFT I had gotten was like, I don't know, $1,600 or something. And I was like, okay, now what? So at this point, $1,000, because the floor was 0.3, I want to say. I got mine for 0.45 at the time. So it was basically $1,000. And I was like, I look at this as a licensing fee. I am now paying $1,000 to get to use an ape, you know, and build a brand from it. And we'll see. And it was a big experiment, but it was a calculated one. And I knew that if we're going to be investing in Web3 and NFTs, that would be a move. And then, of course, Metaverse Lands was the other for me at the time.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, now's probably a great time to kind of fully introduce Myth Division, and we've kind of talked about some of the concepts that have brought this together and kind of the moment that it lined up. But you were working on stuff before this moment as well. But in your own words, maybe you could tell us kind of the broad vision for Myth Division, you know, bringing together these ideas and also thinking about storytelling and world building in a, you know, immersive metaverse sense and open world social games and that kind of thing as well. So yeah, I'd love to just hear you describe it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the core of what I've always wanted to do, even back when I was just creating videos, you know, from Machinima and working with Stan Lee, was just this idea of expansive world building and storytelling. So I was always the guy who, you know, one season of something would come out, or we'd do a series of skits that were really funny, and I'd be like, okay, great, where's the rest of the world building, characters, spin-offs? You know, that was just always kind of how I saw things. Just because I knew that as a collector myself, you know, I grew up obsessed with comics, and when video games came along, I was on the Sega Genesis and all those games too. So, you know, I've always been just kind of immersed myself into other worlds just as a form of entertainment, honestly, escapism as a child. And so now I just have always wanted to create these large epic stories that connect and have opportunity for this kind of immersion. And so early on, that term was called transmedia, and that was coined by a professor at USC. And so I was basically pitching my company as that for a number of years. You know, we're a transmedia company. We tell stories across all these different mediums. And so for me, learning that was essential in the process, learning gaming, learning, you know, comics, learning all these different things. And so now I had, after kind of learning merch and apparel and manufacturing and all of that stuff on top of all that stuff, I felt confident enough to at least start a company that could introduce these concepts and not necessarily be diluted or watered down by splitting up licenses or having to outsource, you know, another team to take over the storytelling. We've had that opportunity to be able to do that. So with NFTs, you know, again, that sort of cemented this idea of being able to take one world, one setting, one group of characters, but tell that across multiple platforms very easily. And so that's essentially what the sort of core idea behind Myth Division is we want to tell the stories that resonate for many, many years to come because they're just that epic. And so that's really what we're up to.
Love it. Good stuff. All right. And one strand of that is with your American Ape, with Bored Ape Seeks Yacht Club. So maybe you could just give us the rundown on where we are with the story there and kind of what's happening for that strand. And then we'll dive into the other strands as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, I'd say our flagship Web3 project. That was based on, you know, a character that I came up with and was able to use for the Bored Ape. So the first Bored Ape that I got, you know, had the 3D glasses and the stunt jacket. I just liked the kind of vibe that he had and the color scheme. And so I was like, great, we're going to make this guy American Ape. And so that's sort of where, I wouldn't say the idea was born, but the execution was definitely born there. And I was like, okay, this is where we can introduce this character and it all just makes sense. So that's really where it started. And, you know, we just wanted to tell stories. So comics were the natural thing. It's something that, you know, I've been doing for years. So it was very easy for me to put together a team and start introducing the origin story of American Ape and how he fits into the broader Ape metaverse, right? And so, you know, I was very early on, right after the minting, a few weeks later, we were already talking about the comic and promoting the art. And it was really exciting because, you know, I got to talk to so many of the original minters and really pitch this idea of a collaborative shared universe where we all get to tell whatever stories about our apes and they overlap. And, you know, at the time it was just apes. And since then it's evolved because more communities have come out and really been storytelling focused. But at the time I felt this was just our jam. Like this is perfect for us. So we created the American Apes storyline. We even got an opportunity to work with a buddy of mine who's a senior storyboard artist at Riot Games. And he came over and directed a short animation piece for us. So we created a loop NFT that features American Ape fighting one of his nemesis. So that was a lot of fun. And that story is going to continue. So we just locked in our artist for 20 issues. We're going to be doing 20 issues of the American Ape comic book series, also called Bored Ape Seeks Yacht Club, because the basic premise is the American Ape wakes up in the metaverse, and he looks at his hat. It says BAYC, and he wants to know what that is and where it is. So he's trying to find the BAYC, and that's the premise. So he has no memory of who he is, and it's a case of mistaking identity. It's pretty cool. It's a way for us to utilize some of the lore that a lot of people have created for their NFTs, but it also kind of ties in a lot of the community dynamic on Twitter and in Discord, because we have a lot of people who are OG apes who are involved in the project who, you know, we're going to get to see what's their character like, you know, what's their ape like. So we're going to get to see all that as we tell this story. And that's all tied and connected to the metaverse lands that we're building on as well. So we've got games tied in, animation, and we're really going to do it all with this. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that paints the picture of this new generation studio that you're at the helm of and this wider community. Yeah, but these characters can be loved in their own right, but also, you know, made by this kind of awesome internet community, as we all know, is Bored Ape Yacht Club. Okay, cool. So that's American Ape and Bored Ape Seeks Yacht Club. Maybe you could introduce us also to Waifu Warriors as well, that kind of narrative and some of the interesting dynamics that you're doing with kind of upgrades and potions and things that are coming as well, which would just be interesting to hear as another IP that's under kind of your umbrella at Myth Division.
Yeah, that's exciting for me because that was our first generative PFP project. And that was really inspired by number one, my wife and one of our partners, because there were at the time no PFPs for women, really. It was strictly like, you know, the apes and the punks. And they didn't really, the women that I knew didn't really like pixel art. You know, that's very much like it's a niche thing, right? You have to really kind of be a lover of 8-bit, right, to really appreciate it. And so anyway, so I was like, okay, great. So then what should we do? And we were talking about just kind of the different projects that we were getting ready to launch over the next few years. And Waifu Warriors was born. And that really was kind of like a project built to subvert some of the reason we called it Waifu is because typically in Waifu, for those who don't know, it's like an anime girl that, you know, someone's like, I want to make her my wife. Like I want to marry her, right? Because she's amazing or hot or whatever, various reasons. And so we really wanted to subvert the trope of it just being an attractive anime girl, but also making them really badass and make it a fighting game and all kinds of different stuff. So we beefed it up and really created a whole universe for this that has quickly turned into something that we're so proud of, because we have our potions, as you mentioned, we have weapons, we have our allies coming soon, and we've actually brought on a showrunner of Hello Kitty to write one of our animated shorts. So we're telling the story just in the same way across animation and, you know, maybe someday film. We're not really working on live action right now, but we've got a bunch of other stuff cooking and gaming as well. And so a big part of this is our dynamic NFTs. And so I can't say too much about it, but what I can say is that we're really thinking about just long-term how we want our NFTs to be able to, you know, change and interact with the choices that the players make. And so we're working on something which is pretty elaborate, and it's become much more elaborate as time has gone on, which is good because we're thinking about how to scale this and ultimately how to really tie this into all the future gaming that's going to happen with, you know, not just NFT projects, but just all games, I think, at some point are going to start to understand that it's just much better for the player if they own the asset and then to actually have the asset owned by the gaming company and the player just buy it and basically lease it or not really own it, right? I think that's, again, just goes back to like the financial changes that we're seeing with crypto and Bitcoin and all this stuff. But this is really, I know you talk about this a lot as well, and we talked a little bit about it when we met. You know, this is really the future is the ability for the average person to own your sword or own your armor or own your character and be able to make money from that, you know, whether that's because you're standing there as an NPC who's guiding people and you're like renting out your character, or if it's because your character is, you know, the armor and you literally have to craft weapons for people all day, you know, and then you hang up your apron. You know, there's all kinds of different things I think that are coming that people are not thinking about, and I'm definitely thinking about it. I know people like us, and I'm sure the listeners are definitely thinking about these things, but we're really trying to think about, how do we not just passively participate? How do I account for this with my visions of telling these big epic, you know, still movies and video games? You know, we want to tell our own stories. A lot of people that I work with, we have had the opportunity to work on these big projects for big names and other studios, but there comes a time where you really want to kind of experiment with your own work. And that's really what we're able to do. And Myth Division at its core, again, utilizing Web3, we want to welcome more creators who also want to, you know, make stuff and innovate. Like, it's going to be cool when we have much more innovative creators, you know, participating.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of on that point, just to kind of summarize what else you're doing with the Myth Division Access tokens and the Myth Division Access coin as well, would be just interesting to touch on, because that's like another element of your studio that probably doesn't exist elsewhere in the traditional world.
Yeah, we are. So because of what we're building, I know that it's an ambitious thing, and it's going to require a lot of time. And our devs are, man, they are some of the best in the business, I have to say. I'm so blessed to even be like having conversations with them, because they're constantly telling me, oh, well, if we're going to do that, we're going to want to do this. You know what I mean? And so a big part of how we wanted to approach the space was just think about, again, where we're going and how long we're going to be building. And so we've created these tiers, where the idea is we have our Alpha Access coins, which are kind of like the holy grail of our VIP access token. And that really grants you access to almost everything, right? Anything that one of our tokens gives access to, the Alpha Access token is like the skeleton key that gives you access to all of it. So it's a mint pass. It is utility inside of our games, right? It'll give you access to secret areas. It'll give you access to free airdrops, access to free merch. If you have one and you run into us at a convention or in real life somewhere, you can oftentimes claim, you know, free physical things just like off of our table. So it's kind of just, you know, a master key, I guess you could say, in a lot of ways, to get access to everything. And the cool thing is, the way that we allowed our initial batch of people to mint those was they were able to burn their tokens that they held at Myth Division in order to claim one. So we've always been trying to think of accessibility and not having the bar be so high that, you know, like other projects, it becomes like a pipe dream to even get in. We've been lucky enough that over the last year and a half, we've been able to give people opportunities to buy smaller things and burn them to work their way up. So with that in mind, that's kind of how we're structuring our characters and our potions and all that stuff. And so we have several different tiers of access tokens that grant different things, and we'll be releasing more as time goes on. There's one that's going to be released later this year for our comic book. Anyone who's a comic book lover who reads our comics are going to love the new access pass, because it's going to be related specifically to comics, and that's probably the alpha of the week everyone's going to be looking for. but no, we're excited, man. I'm just trying to think, the way that I approach this space is I put myself in the shoes of the buyer or the collector, and if I feel like it doesn't make sense to me or I would be unhappy about it, then I try and respond in a way that makes sense to me. And so far that's been just really helped us establish our credibility in the space as a brand that is open and listens and is here for the community. So we're trying to keep that as open as possible. As big as we get, we're going to try our best to keep that, you know, at the core of our community philosophy.
Yeah, it's good to hear for sure. I know we've not got too much time left, but I wanted to just ask you a couple more questions if we can. One, just I'd be interested if you had any storytelling kind of advice for people, because I think we're in this moment where, you know, people who are tapping into their storytelling ability that maybe they didn't know they had, and NFTs kind of can kind of enable that in a new way. So I'd be interested to see if you had any general advice, and then for anyone wanting to create their own kind of IP in this new world using NFTs potentially, any kind of specific advice for people there would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, ultimately you have to start from where you want to end and work backwards. So what I tell people a lot of time is, you know, look at your NFT. If we're starting from the example of, say, you know, a person who they saved up, they bought this great NFT, it's part of a well-known collection, or, you know, just a collection at all where there's other storytellers. Think about where you want that to end up, right? Do you want it on a cereal box? Do you want it on a TV show? Do you want it? I know a lot of people are like, yes, yes, all of it, everywhere. But you really just like with, you know, any kind of pursuit, you really want to kind of hone in on where you want to be specifically and knowing that you can sort of sacrifice other things to get there faster. Does that make sense? So in the case of someone with an NFT, it's probably best if you define who your character is first, right? So I would say thinking about taking classes or reading books about just marketing characters. Like if you're really going to invest your time in this, because this is a great opportunity and it's definitely not for everyone. I will say that. Like, I don't think everyone should quit their 9-to-5s necessarily just yet and start, you know, jumping into crypto. You know, I've seen a lot of people do that and have gotten hurt. So, you know, I'd never recommend that. But what I do recommend is while you're, you know, playing with whatever your, let's say, savings is, let's say that you are able to lose this amount of money, right? That's the safe thing to do. Then yeah, spend some extra money on courses or learning just marketing basics on how to create a character, watch podcasts, go on YouTube and listen to storytellers talk about storytelling or character creation, right? And from there, you can sort of start to create and shape who your character is. And then you're able to then start from there talking to members of the community to see what they're doing with their project and really figuring out your place in the space. But ultimately, it's about having clear vision for where you want your character to be. Because when we're looking at characters we're going to license, a lot of times it's much easier if there's a very clear character, right? That guy has an eye patch and a hat and, you know, blows bubblegum. Like, there's a story around that, right? And so that's constantly what we're thinking about is what's the story? How can we expand on the story that's already there? So I'd say that, you know, that's just like anything that's artistic. Hone your craft. Be good at what you want to do. If you're a writer, keep getting good at writing, right? And be able to send writing samples that are good, that impress people. And then that's going to be the easy way to get to the head of the line, even in a lot of these communities, because there's a lot of people that want to tell stories and maybe aren't good storytellers or aren't good writers. And so they're looking for other people to do this for them. And so there's tons of ways for artists to be able to kind of get into these communities and build a reputation. And then from there, you're able to have at least a support system or another group of artists who may support whatever IP you're going to launch. Because the hardest thing, and this is what I would recommend people not do, is jump into a community and just start shilling your idea or your IP, right? You want to make sure that you have friends who support you. You've been supportive of their vision. They've been supportive of your vision. And then after a few months of that, ideally, you know, then you can say, hey, I want to do this IP. At that point, they may even be willing to help you build it. You know, you never know. You may be able to, as a writer, find an artist, or as an artist, find a writer. And that's when you can really lean into the community and I think successfully launch a new IP. But I think knowing when and knowing when not to is key, and learning as much as you can beforehand is definitely the best bet.
Yeah, that's some solid advice for sure. Final question then is, I always like to just spitball into the future, and these questions can't really be answered, but as someone who's kind of building on the ground and storytelling's at the key of everything you do, how are you thinking about the metaverse and what it looks like in the future? And, you know, how are you thinking about all the different elements of all these trends coming together, AR, VR, and yeah, you know, immersive worlds and all these things? What's your kind of sort of vision? Where do you think the next kind of 5 years goes with storytelling in mind?
In like 5 years? I mean, I think 5 years is when we'll probably start to see mass adoption in the next 3 to 5 years. I think, you know, we're still so early. Not a lot of people even understand kind of the implications of some of the technology that we're talking about, you know, because some of it is powerful and therefore can be dangerous when in the wrong hands. So I think it's a matter of sort of starting for us who are early and in the space to set precedents. And then if we can set precedents in terms of like how best, you know, best practices, you know, having some kind of ethics with things, right? Establishing transparencies and checkpoints and things like that, then I think we'll be in good shape. But I think it's just a tremendous amount of potential here. There's so many people. And I think, you know, it became really vivid for me when we were in Dubai, because getting to see kind of, and even, you know, some of the people that we were hanging out with who have been living there in Dubai their whole lives, right, were able to kind of explain that this is a city that was built so quickly and we have so much potential to do the same thing. The technology that is popping up can be integrated or not integrated as quickly as we are capable of thinking of solutions. So I'm excited about AR. I'm excited about mixed reality. I think those have the most long-term potential for integration into other verticals and industries. I think VR will probably still pretty much stick mostly to gaming and maybe education, right? History and that kind of stuff. But I think the long-term use case, I think, which is more practical, is the AR, MR industry. And so that's kind of what I'm looking at too. And I think it's just crazy what's going to be possible, but it's going to be important for us to kind of, again, set precedent and be vocal about what we think is good for humanity and dangerous for humanity every step of the way, you know?
Yeah, that's well said. I think, everyone in this space now who's building is building part of the future, and to do it in the right way is definitely important. So, Ramon, thank you so much. I think we're out of time, but appreciate you coming on. That's a fascinating chat. And, final thing is maybe you could just push people to Myth Division. Where should they go to find out more and learn more about the stories and get involved?
Yeah, right now, the best way is on social or our website. We have mythdivision.com. Best experience is on, I think, desktop or iPad. But we're also on Twitter. It's just @MythDivision. We're also on Instagram, same thing, MythDivision. And then you can always find me on most active on Twitter, @RamonGovea. And then I'm also on Instagram and the other platforms too.
So there we go. Hope you enjoyed that one with the excellent Ramon. I think sometimes hard to tell in the moment, but entire new IP models being born during this time. We're all learning and building this future together, so definitely a special time right now for sure. Do give Ramon a follow. His links are in the show notes along with my own, and of course Every Realms. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show, and thank you very much most of all to you for listening. I will see you for next week's episode.